is Digital Marketer. This week it's John Doherty from GetCredo.com.
John, thank you so much for joining us. So excited to have you here. How are you doing today, man?
Garrett, thanks for having me, man. I am doing well. It is a beautiful, sunny Friday in Denver. Life is good, man. Can't complain.
Absolutely. Yeah, I got to say, it is a beautiful day here in Austin, Texas as well. We've had a lot of rain here, so it's nice to see the sunshine. So, John, I'm really, really interested in your career. You've had quite the path, and yeah. you've started a few businesses here. But can you kind of take us back to the beginning and share, you know, kind of your story?
Yeah, for sure. So to go way back to the beginning, I was born and raised in Virginia. So I'm a Southern boy at heart, born and raised in the heart of the Shenandoah Valley. I now live in Denver, Colorado, but I'm in Denver via a very circuitous route. Basically, I've lived in most major cities on the Eastern Seaboard, except for Atlanta and Boston.
Okay.
So I've lived in Washington, D.C., Philly, and New York. I also spent 2 years living in Switzerland in a hippie commune in the Swiss Alps in a dairy village.
Wow.
And helped run a company from there. I'm sure we'll talk about that.
Yes.
Run a company from there, which is where my entrepreneurial bug kind of started.
Okay.
But basically, I got into SEO and online marketing in 2009. So it's been a decade now.
Yeah.
And so started doing SEO and content. I've been blogging since about 2001. 2002. So I've been writing online for a long time. I actually consider myself a writer before I'm anything else.
Really?
So
great.
I love writing. Writing's my jam. And yeah, so then to make a long story short, I worked agency side in Philly and New York. I went in house with Zillow for 2 years and ran marketing and growth on hotpads.com and then on Trulia Rentals for about 5 months. And then in September 2015, I started working full time on the business that is now Credo. So now we are there's 2.5 of us right now, work with contractors and such, obviously.
Yeah.
We're growing and it's an exciting time, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's talk about Credo a little bit right now. And I'm saying it correctly, right? Credo?
You are.
All right. Perfect. So if you're listening now and aren't familiar with Credo, getcredo.com. And I'm probably going to butcher this. So will you tell us what Credo is all about?
Absolutely. So Credo it's a two-sided business. So on the client side, which clients is what we call businesses that are looking to find, hire, and work with the right digital marketing firm for their needs.
Yeah.
So we specialize in helping them find SEO, content marketing, advertising, Google Ads, specifically Facebook and Instagram advertising. So we help them connect up with the right firm. So to do that, we have a network of vetted digital marketing firms that we basically refer work to, but it's not just like contact us and we send you a couple of names. We actually take a high touch approach and we speak with every client that's coming in and then we introduce them to two and our system kind of takes them through the process of signing with them ultimately and working well with them. So that's what we do. I founded it. I think the first website launched in March 2013.
Okay.
When I was working at Distilled in New York City, it was a side project for a couple of years. So that's what we do.
Yeah.
And then on the agency side or on the firm side, we help digital marketing firms that are best in class at what they do, but they're kind of looking to accelerate their lead generation and all of that. So it's not like people that are brand new out on their own looking to get their first clients, but really like consultants that have been on their own for a while that are specializing and looking to add a few clients a year. We have one agency that's billing over $1 million a year from us at this point.
Great.
And multiple in the multiple six figures range. So
it's awesome.
We know what we're doing and we can help out the right agencies and firms really, really well.
Yeah, no doubt. So I like the term vetted. I like the fact that you vet these agencies before you post them on the site. Can you kind of walk us through what makes an agency a good agency and what do you look for in an agency before you put your stamp on that?
Absolutely. So this is something that we've obviously put a lot of time and thought into. And for a long time, it was me vetting them out. I still do most of that, but basically okay. what we've narrowed it down to and streamlined it down to is it's a 21 point and 3-step process. I won't talk through all 21 points, but basically the 3 steps to vetting out an agency or consultant.
Okay.
And we tend to primarily work with firms that are in the 4 to 9 person
okay.
range.
Yep.
We can really help them out well.
Yeah.
Solo consultants that are specialized, we can help them out too. And bigger firms, yeah, we work with those also, but our sweet spot is kind of the 4 to 9 person
okay.
Agency.
Perfect.
So the 3 steps are, there are 3 things that we look for. One is results, right? Metrics. Do you get good results for your clients, right?
Yeah.
And so we ask for a couple of the clients that they've done work for. We actually contact those clients. We look at their, if they say they did SEO, we look at that. We ask for case study. We ask them to have case studies on their site. And that goes into the professionalism route. So when they're delivering work, what do those look like, right? Is it a Google sheet of like, you know, issues to fix? Like, someone shouldn't pay a couple thousand dollars for that, right? Paying you a couple thousand dollars, you should be writing it up. It should be well branded. It should have both the discoveries and also what they need to do and what their next steps are. It should have all of that. You know, if you go monthly stuff, are you reporting every month? You know, what are you reporting on? All of those things. So those are the first two, results and professionalism. And then the third one is culture. So we actually do a call with every pro before we allow them to join the network, simply because we want to make sure that we're referring work to good people. And then also we want to get to know the people within our network more than just a like email basis, because part of our secret sauce, part of what we try to do is we actually try to match up the clients that are looking to hire with people that they're actually going to get along well with.
Yeah, I love that.
Because it makes their experience better. And that's the thing that most people get wrong about hiring an agency when they're looking to do it. It's not just, can they do the work, right? There are a lot of people out there that can do the work, but are you going to enjoy working with them? And do you work with them in a similar way? So I got a client through recently that I was talking to her and, you know, kind of learning what she needed. And I was thinking like, oh man, you know, this agency could get phenomenal results for her, but she's not going to like the owner.
Yep.
So I'm not going to send her there, right? I have other clients that are going to like that owner and are going to get along with them, and I'll send them that way, but I'm not going to send her that way. So that's actually a really important part and something that we do differently than everybody else.
Yeah.
That we really try to like, you know, help people have a great experience with working with their agency, because ultimately that's what long-term drives results. It has to start with, can they get results? And then after that, the thing that makes it successful is, do they work together well?
Definitely. Oh, that sounds so great. I mean, literally a curated approach to finding an agency and doing it in a way that isn't just the results, but also the culture and the human to human side of it. I love that. I love that. So one of the things that, you know, I'm thinking about right now is, you know, this is the perfect solution for people going out and finding somebody to help them with their marketing. What about, you know, if somebody is going out and looking for, you know, an agency to help them out with some of the things that they're doing, obviously they can go to Credo, but what, you know, let's say they're working with someone local, they're just kind of vetting out a couple of local marketing agencies. What would you recommend that they kind of look for in an agency before they go with one? Is there any kind of red flags that people should be looking for, or any, you know, green flags, I would say, that are like, yes, you should work with that person?
To answer your question, I'm going to question the whether someone should even be talking with a local agency.
Okay.
I have a blog post on the Credo blog that literally talks about basically this exact question. Should they do it or not? There are absolutely times that you should, right? If you're a local restaurant, you know, maybe you have like four different restaurants, you know, in one locale, right? I live in Denver. So say like there's a guy here that owns seven different restaurants in the Denver area.
Yeah.
They should work probably with a firm that is focused on local restaurant advertising for the Denver area, because they're going to have the connections. They're going to know the people that they can get promoted through, all of those sorts of things, right? They know how to target the individual neighborhoods and what neighborhoods, you know, what demographics, that sort of stuff. That's the perfect use case for a local agency. If you're an e-commerce shop, why are you going to work with what, you know, so you're an e-commerce shop in Austin, right?
Yep.
It doesn't really matter if the company is in Austin or if they're in Seattle or if they're in New York City, right? I mean, they might be a little bit cheaper in Austin, though Austin's not cheap, but it's cheaper than, you know, Seattle and New York City and San Francisco. But like, what if the e-commerce, you know, the e-commerce agency you're looking for is in Montana, right? Like, yeah, they're probably gonna be cheaper than in Austin. Plus maybe they do better work, right? Yeah. You shouldn't make yourself like bound. Plus also, if you're spending enough with them, they're going to come visit you and you're going to have that in-person time, right?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously it has to be at a certain point that it has to make sense, or maybe they make it part of the engagement and you pay for them to come down. But if you're spending $10,000, $15,000+, you know, a month with them, you know, you do want that. But the way to solve that in person is not, or that personal touch is not just finding a firm in your local area.
Yeah.
And especially if you're like, if you're a smaller, you know, shop as well, and you're only spending say $500 a month, right? If you're only spending $500 a month with someone, even if they're local, they're not going to be coming to your office.
Yeah.
Because it's just not, you know, ROI positive for them. It just doesn't make sense. So to your question about like red flags and green flags, red flags about hiring a firm are, number one is if they can't tell you any clients that they've worked with that are similar to you.
Uh-huh.
That's not necessarily a like hard stop. Don't continue the conversation with them. But if they're, you know, once again, continuing on with the e-commerce example, if they've worked in e-commerce, but they haven't necessarily worked in fashion before, right?
Yeah.
We get a lot of fashion e-commerce companies coming through Credo. I swear, okay. For 2 weeks, 50% of the companies coming through were like women's fashion startups. It was hilarious.
Interesting.
There's a lot of them out there right now, apparently. But if, you know, the company say they haven't worked in fashion, but they've been working in e-commerce, you know, SEO for, you know, for 20 years, mm-hmm. right? Keep talking to them, right? Ask them, you know, why they haven't worked with a fashion company before, right? Because they've been doing e-commerce for 20 years. They probably should have worked with a fashion company. But my point is, like, it more matters, do they have experience with the kind of company that you are than the specific vertical that you're in? But, you know, if they can't share any clients that they've done, or they can't share how they've gotten results for their clients, right? If they're not forthcoming on how they work with clients, what they do for clients, that sort of stuff, oh, it's our secret sauce, blah, 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 walk away. Honestly,
yeah.
The best firms are the ones that'll tell you, like, they're open and they want to be teaching and they want to help you succeed, right? They're open about who they're working with. You know, if they're outsourcing anything, right? And they're kind of like the go-between account manager, they should tell you that.
Yeah.
So that's the number one red flag that I see when it comes to hiring.
Mm-hmm.
And then also a second red flag is, so, you know, you should speak with multiple firms if you're looking to hire. That's why we connect people with two at Credo. We used to do more, but we found that would just giving them too much choice.
Yeah.
And they just ended up just as confused as they were before. So now we do two. But then if someone comes back and they're like, you know what? You know, we don't want to keep talking with this firm. Can you give us another? Yeah, absolutely. Like, you should have multiple conversations.
Mm-hmm.
So my second point is, the second thing that you should look for is, you know, you're having multiple conversations with people. We introduce people at Credo to two, used to be more, but now, you know, we introduce them to two. If they come back and say, actually, we don't want to keep talking with this person, you know, they have a competitor or something like that, can we talk to a third? Great. Absolutely. So you should get, you know, multiple proposals, multiple pitches, have multiple conversations, but look at what the dollar amount is. I know it's natural when even I, like at Credo, we work with some firms to do various things for us that, you know, I'm not going to hire in-house for, that I used to do, that I don't have the time for anymore. And so I get multiple proposals, but what do we all do when we get in a proposal? What do we look at first?
Price.
How much is it going to cost?
Yep.
Exactly. Price. So basically, all the pitches that you're getting in, and it comes down to, like, what are they proposing to you for the price, right? And if someone is saying, you know, we will do X, Y, and Z for, you know, $2,500 a month, right? Okay, cool. That's, you know, that's kind of where you like set the bar, set your expectations.
Yep.
If someone comes in and says they're going to do the same work for $750, boom, red flag. Why? Why is it so cheap? Right. And if someone comes in and says, we'll do that same amount for $5,000, wait, why is that so much higher?
Yeah.
Maybe you do want to go with the, you know, with the 5K one, because, you know, they're saying they're going to do outreach, et cetera, but your main point of contact's wife is the head editor at the lead publication in your industry. Okay. Pay them, sign with them, right? Like, they're going to get you the result. It's all about the value, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So basically my point is, if, you know, pricing comes in dramatically above or dramatically below, that should be a red flag. But
yeah,
below what you're expecting, you get what you pay for, straight up.
Definitely.
And if you know, you're like, well, we'll just start with the $750 one and try it on and, you know, see how it works. You know, I've seen that happen too often. And then 3 months later, they come back and they're like, yeah, they weren't really able to get us the results. I'm like, yeah, because you weren't paying them for the results, right? Like, you weren't paying them what you should have been paying them. And then, you know, and then they come back and they end up signing with a more expensive one, and they've just wasted a few months of time, and they wasted, you know, $2,250, $3,000, something like that.
Yeah.
So those are the two main red flags.
Yeah.
Charging too little and also not telling you what they do. And then green flags, does your website say, this is what we do, this is who we do it for, this is what it costs, this is what our process is, right? Are they transparent? Are they open? You know, I have one agency that we've been working with on Credo for a long time that, you know, they're really good at one channel, but their website doesn't talk about that. This is part of why we put in the, like, the professionalism thing,
yeah,
part of the vetting process, because we'll send them, you know, we'll refer clients to them for this channel, and the client will come back and say, like, actually, I don't want to speak with them because their website doesn't talk about it. I'm like, I'm telling you, they do this channel for Staples. They do it for all these big companies, right? They're like, yeah, but their website doesn't talk about it. So, you know, if their website doesn't talk about it, that should be a red flag.
Mm-hmm.
If it does talk about it, though, if someone else is telling you, like, actually, we know that they're really good at this, right? Have the conversation. But, you know, they should be completely upfront with you about, this is what we do, this is who we do it for, this is how we do it, this is how we work, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think the thing that a lot of people overlook is, do I like the person and do I trust them, right? And can they show me provable results? Do they have case studies? You know, once again, that goes back to proving that they can do the work. Do they have case studies and all that? But then also, you know, do I like them? And is their company set up the the way that I want to work, right? If you want that direct personal touch with the founder, you're going to need a smaller firm and also recognize that you might have to pay a premium for that, right? Mm-hmm. But if it's a bigger agency, you're probably going to, you might be speaking with the founder or like a sales exec, but then that's not the person that you're going to be working with probably, you know, once you actually sign on with them. So finding out who is that person, can they come on to, you know, our strategy call after we've done a quick discovery call, can they come on to the strategy call so I can get to know them, right?
Yeah.
Like, who's going to be on, who's going to be running the, you know, running the campaigns, that kind of thing. What's their experience? Like asking those sorts of questions. And if they're not able to tell you, red flag. If yeah. they are, then green flag.
Perfect. No, that's super, super informative. And you know, as you say it, it makes, you know, it sounds obvious, but so many people don't think about those things as they go. And they, I mean, you're trusting these people with so much of your own money, your hard earned money to grow your business. And just right now I'm dealing with somebody who I'm talking with who recently had an agency work with them and took $6,000 and really hasn't done anything since. And so it's just, I mean, you know, yeah. and that's, you know, that's part of why I'm asking these questions, because I think as an agency, you need to be aware, but also as a consumer, you need to be aware of all of these things that are so important when choosing who you're going to go with for your marketing. So
absolutely.
So here's a question geared towards the agency owners out there. So here at Digital Marketer, we have kind of three stages that an agency is in. So you're in the attract stage where you're looking to get more business. You're in the scale stage where you've solved this issue of getting more business. Now you need to scale your operations, systematize your operations to make that possible. And then the last is grow. So grow your retainers, grow your recurring revenue. So I'm interested because it seems like you have I don't know if it's a product, a book or something coming out about this attract stage, sales for marketers, you know, talking about how to get more clients in the door. And I'm curious to hear what this product is or what your philosophy is on getting more clients.
It's funny to me because I work with marketing agencies, right? And so one would think that marketing agencies would be good at getting their own clients, which is interesting. But most struggle, you know, most struggle to do it. I would say the vast majority of agencies out there struggle to get their own clients.
Yeah.
And there are a few main reasons why that happens. So the first one that I see is that they don't take care of their own house before they work on somebody else's. So, I mean, their website, they don't say what they do, how they do it and who they do it for.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't say that. And then the big one there after that is, they don't say who they are, right?
Yeah.
They don't show their own face. They don't say like, you know, I'm Garrett and this is my team and this is what we do and this is my years of experience. This is who I've worked for, that kind of thing.
Right.
That is the biggest one, man, honestly.
Yeah.
Where they're not building that trust up front. They've built some like old WordPress website. And I always hear the cobbler's kids excuse, right? Oh, the cobbler's kids have no shoes. Think about this. Do Ralph Lauren's kids wear crappy shoes? No.
Can't imagine so.
I can't imagine they do, right? Unless they're going with current fashion trends, which are terrible. But, you know, but they don't wear cheap shoes. Let's put it that way, right?
Right.
Shoes that are falling apart, right?
Right.
So, you know, yeah, maybe like the poor cobbler's kids do. But if you're actually doing, you know, who's not charging enough, right? Or who's targeting the wrong customers.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure they're a great person, but they also like, they can't afford to, you know, put good shoes on their kids' feet. They're not taking care of their house first. So as an agency in that stage, you need to make sure that you have a website that is well designed, right? Invest in good design. You know, I mean, even just to buy a premium WordPress template if you're on WordPress, right? And get a designer to come in and clean it up.
Mm-hmm.
Pay a developer to come and clean it up, right? Contact like CodeMentor X to get them to help you out with you know, finding someone to do that for you. That's number one. And then the second one is they don't focus on who they do the best work for. They're like, oh yeah, you need SEO, we do that. You need PPC, we do that. You need e-commerce marketing, yeah, sure. Lead generation, we got you. Local restaurant, you betcha.
Yeah.
People are like, what? Like, are you actually good at any of these things, right? So at the end of the day, if you want to scale and you want to grow, and I'm sure you guys see this at Digital Marketer, Garrett, is, you know, you have to be focused on, these are the channels that we offer. These are the kinds of clients that we do it for,
yeah.
right? So you have to settle on that before you can actually have that messaging straight on your website.
Yeah.
But those are really kind of the base things. And then the final one is, you know, charging what your value is, right?
Okay.
Not just saying, you know, this is what my, you know, having initial conversation. And then, dude, I hear so many agencies say, yeah, I had a conversation with them and I put together a proposal and I threw it over the fence and I'll see what comes back. The only stuff that comes back when you throw something over the fence is the stuff that the person on the other side didn't want.
Uh-huh.
Right? So, and I see so many agencies that they're like, yeah, you know, they told me this and they told me they want to spend X. So I took X and I multiplied it by two. And if they come back, then I'll sign them and I'll take their money. You know what happens then? If you don't actually want to sign them and you're putting the price high so that you're probably not going to sign them, don't waste your time sending the proposal. And if you do sign them, you're probably going to have to staff up. And then if they weren't the right fit for you at the start, they're probably going to churn out quickly. And then you're going to have staffed up and you won't be able to pay those salaries.
Yep.
It's a terrible way to grow a company. Yeah. So stop doing that. Stop lobbing those proposals over the fence and seeing what comes back. Actually tell them, you know what? I don't think we're going to be a great fit for you. You know, can I refer you somewhere else?
Yeah.
I think agencies need to spend, especially in like the just getting started stage or just entering into the scale stage, you need to get much more focused on who are you actually pitching and can you do phenomenal work for them? And ask yourself, will we be successful with this project? If you won't be, don't pitch it.
Yep. No doubt. Yeah, it's great to hear that because we actually have an example. A friend of ours, Mike Garcy, he owns Loud Rumor, which is an agency focused on fitness studios. And he used to run an agency that was just, hey, we'll do your marketing for anyone. You know, anyone can come in the door. He had, I believe we did an episode way early on in the Digital Marketer Podcast with Mike, and he talks all about that. So if you want to listen to it, head over there and check it out after this. But yeah, so Mike talks about how he didn't see that major success until he realized, I love working with fitness studios. I'm good at it, and I can really help them grow. And then boom, his business took off. He let most of those other clients go and said, we're focusing on this. And then now more successful than ever. I mean, just proof is in the pudding.
And also it's a big niche, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you've got the, like, I follow a lot of the, like the fitness kind of like big, you know, business guys like Vince Del Monte and Bedros Koulian and Craig Ballantyne and all those guys.
Yeah.
Right. And like, that's another point there is like, he picked a niche that is big.
Yeah.
You know, and it's growing and it's hot right now. Right.
Yeah.
And also like, they're fitness nuts, right? They're not marketers. And so you can help them out, right? This is why Fitbody Bootcamp has been so successful because they have playbooks for marketing all their franchises.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's totally true. And actually with Credo, that we saw that as well. So when we first started off, it's like, you know, looking for a digital marketer of any kind, we can help you out, right? And then as over time, we focus it down and said, like, if you're looking for SEO, content marketing, PPC, Facebook, Instagram advertising, we can help you out. We list the others for sure. We have those pages. We rank for, you know, for some of them, but those don't drive leads.
Yeah.
Right? They'll drive a little bit of traffic, but they don't drive leads. They don't drive, you know, clients that are actually going to sign. So once we start focusing down, I mean, my company's taken off, to be totally honest with you.
It's awesome.
So I think that's super key. And it's something a lot of people are afraid to niche down. A lot of providers are afraid to niche down because they're like, well, but then I'm going to be like losing all of this potential. It's like, well, potential doesn't do you any good if it doesn't actualize, right? So it's a constant struggle, and I get it. And I mean, I was afraid to niche down as well.
Mm-hmm.
But like once I started doing it, you know, and put it directly on our homepage, these are the kinds of businesses that we do the best work for. These are the kinds of channels that we can help people out best finding a provider for. It was just like, right?
Yep.
Just hockey stick.
Perfect. So one. Serious tactical question, and I know it's broad, so there's probably a million things that you could say here. But what's a one or two things that's just really working right now for you in marketing your own business?
Oh man, great question. Two things. The first one is doing podcasts like this.
Yeah,
because everyone's on the go. Everyone has, you know, AirPods in their ears these days. Podcasts are blowing up. And it's a great way. It's a higher barrier to entry than blogging, right? Than writing content and creating content in that way. And so, you know, and I love getting on and having conversations like this with people like you. And so it's a great way to kind of spread that reach.
Yeah.
So I've done a lot of podcasts in the last few years, and you know, we talk to people and say, how'd you hear about us? Oh, I heard John on the Digital Marketer Podcast.
Mm-hmm.
You know, talking about what you do, and I need that. You know, they come to the site and we talk about who we are and what we do and who we do it for, right? All those things. They contact us. So podcast is awesome. And then also, I'm an SEO at heart, right? I've been doing SEO for a decade now. When I do podcasts, then, you know, you publish the podcast episode, you might put a transcript or something like that. And then you're also linking to my site.
Yep.
Right. So it's like, it's a link building strategy as well. Right. Not primarily by any means. And you know, if you don't link to me, I'm not going to email you and be like, hey, Gary, can you please link to Credo?
We'll link to you. I promise.
I appreciate that. But like, that's also not why I'm doing
right.
It. It's a knock on effect. Right.
Yeah.
So if you look at my profile, I built a lot of links from doing podcasts. And it's been awesome, but it's not why I'm doing it primarily. And then the second one is a little ironic, because of what I just said about it's a higher barrier to entry than creating content. But creating big content guides. So I'm not talking 500 word blog posts. I'm talking like the canonical piece of content about the topic on the internet. I have an 18,000 word guide to SaaS, software as a service, SEO on my site.
Wow.
I have an e-commerce marketing guide that's like 12,000 words, something like that. Yeah. So here's the cool thing, Garrett, and this is where it gets tactical. So like I said, I'm a writer, right? I love writing. I'm working on my own book right now, but not about marketing. But if you can create that content, create it at that scale, it sets you apart from everybody else, right? Mm-hmm. And then also what we see in SEO now is that, you know, there's talk about entities and basically topics, right? And topical relations. So when you write a piece of content, you know, of that level, and then people are linking to that, you publish that piece of content on your site. What I see is kind of the rising tides lifts all ships sort of metaphor.
Yeah.
Let's say you do SaaS SEO, you publish a huge piece of content about SaaS SEO. You're like SaaS SEO agency page. Like for us, we published that piece of content and we got a lift on all of our SaaS like SEO related pages on our website, even our transactional pages.
Wow.
So that can work really, really well. It's a lot of effort that probably took me, I don't know, that guide probably took me 60 hours, 70 hours, something like that. It took me a lot of time. I had a couple of flights to and from Australia to work on writing it on.
Yep.
Had a lot of plane time. That's where I do a lot of my writing. But like that's hopefully a tactical tip right there that, you know, and then also you produce that content, right? It's a canonical piece of content that's going to rank. You know, I dominate like SaaS SEO related terms in Google, partially because of that piece. But then also you can drive targeted traffic there, right? So like from Quora or Facebook or somewhere like that, doing super targeted advertising, driving them to that piece of content, and then offer the guide as a download, right?
Yeah.
Like it's a big piece of content. And I literally say like, take this to go.
Yeah.
Right. Like you're not going to sit here and read this. I know that. Here, I've literally done it as an ebook for you. So give us your email and we'll send it to you. So then you're capturing those top of funnel leads.
Yep. I've got multiple of those little, you know, downloadable ebooks right now in my office that I sent to the local print shop and had made into a book. I was like, I don't like reading them online, but I love these as books. So I have them in my office. So it works on me. It works on me. That's for sure.
Great.
So great. Awesome. Well, let's hear this commune story because I've been dying to hear what this is all about.
Yeah. You live in Austin, so this will resonate with
okay,
you.
Okay, perfect.
My wife grew up half of her childhood outside of Austin. So
okay.
I love Austin. But so basically when I was in college, I don't talk about this often on podcasts, but I grew up in a evangelical Christian tradition,
okay.
A religious tradition.
Yeah.
And so I was in college. I was basically like, I don't know who I am. I mean, I was 22 years old, 21, uh-huh. 22. I was like, I guess I was 21 when I first went. I was like, I don't know who I am. I don't know what I believe, any of this sort of stuff. And my father had actually spent a couple of months at this commune in the mid 70s.
Wow. And
I was like, hey, Dad, he told me about it. We were on a trip to Switzerland in 2003, my senior year of college. And he told me about the place. I was 18 and was like, wait, you lived in Switzerland for a couple months? And so then a couple of years on, I was like, hey, Dad, I think I want to take some time off. You know, what about L'Abri? It's called L'Abri, which is French for the shelter. Mm-hmm. I was like, what about, you know, I think I want to go to L'Abri. He's like, great. As I told you, we'll pay for it, et cetera. So I dropped out of college for a semester and went there and basically like got my life and my brain back on track.
Wow.
And then I ended up coming back, finishing up school. At JMU in Virginia, and then went back there for about 8 months directly after college. So I was basically just like, you know, poor hippie living in the Alps, you know, for another 8 months, moved back to the States, got a job with software development company, did that for about a year and was like, you know what? I think I want to go back to Switzerland for a while. And so I ended up going back for a year. I had met a guy that lives in the village who was high up in IBM in Europe and Africa for a long time.
Uh-huh.
And he's an entrepreneur. He has started a book publishing company. And so I moved over there, lived at the community. He actually met his wife in the community in the 70s and lived in the community, did stuff in the community, but also was primarily working on this book publishing company, which was focused on publishing books written by the staff of the community and like all the other branches around the world.
Very cool.
So that really got me into online marketing. You know, I came back with hair down below my shoulders. so, you know, it was a time, man. It was
awesome.
But that really like, you know, that time, you know, kind of stepping back. So if anyone like listening to this is young, right? You're 22, 23 years old, something like that. I highly recommend, like I got married when I was right before I turned 30.
Okay.
I moved around a lot. I was also very fortunate in that my parents are educators. They paid for my undergrad. So I came out with no debt, right?
Yep.
So I want to be very empathetic to people that do have that debt that can't do this. But I will say like, if you can, when you're in your 20s, like go and travel and, you know, meet a lot of interesting people and figure out who you are. Try on a lot of different things.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, ultimately, life is long, man. Like I'm 34, I'll be 35, you know, next month, in July 2019. But, you know, I have another, I hopefully have another 50 years on this planet, right? Yeah. I'm not even halfway through my lifespan. Uh-huh. So, you know, and yes, if you go and do the, you know, travel, hostel, party, you know, summer after college sort of stuff, I've done that. It's awesome. But then if you can live, you know, live somewhere else for a while, like get out of where you live, move to Austin, move to Denver, move to Seattle, move to Switzerland. Like, I don't care. Move to Chiang Mai. I don't care where you move.
Yeah.
Get outside of your bubble and where you've been, and realize that the world is so much bigger than what you've been exposed to so far. I still feel that way. And I've been to like 27, 28 countries and all but four of the US states. I still feel that way.
Wow. That's awesome. It's funny because we literally, the last question, and I'll still ask you, but I think you've pretty much answered it. The last question we always ask on this podcast is, you know, now that you've owned your own business, now that you've gone through this entire path in the world of online marketing and entrepreneurship, what's one thing you wish you could tell your 25-year-old self? And you said a lot of these cool things, but maybe, you know, in terms of, you know, a young business owner out there, somebody who's just, you know, maybe not a young business owner, but somebody who's just starting their own business. What's something you wish you knew before you went into this?
I would actually, and I think I actually did this right, but didn't realize I was doing it right. So I started working in like SEO and marketing when I was 25.
Okay.
In 2009, I had just moved back, or I was just moving over to, you know, to Switzerland at that point, again. And I was too young and inexperienced to really be successful with helping to run that company. If I went back now, like that company would be successful, no doubt.
Yeah.
But you know, I was just getting started. So what I tell people when they're younger and they're like, you know, how do I get started doing SEO, right? How do I get started, you know, learning PPC? I'm like, well, find the people that are, you know, kind of the thought leaders that have been doing it for a long time and learn from them, right? If it's SEO, go, you know, download the Moz Beginner's Guide to SEO. Right. And start off with that and then launch your own sites. But then don't just go and start offering, you know, quote unquote, SEO services to clients. Go work for an agency.
Yeah.
Learn from people, have mentors, have people that teach you how to do it. Right. Have the, don't saddle yourself with all of the challenges of like generating leads, closing them into clients, managing the clients, getting the results, reporting, managing the business, all that sort of stuff. Don't do that to yourself yet. It's hard. It's really, really hard. Go work for an agency where they're bringing the clients. You're working on them. Yes, you're going to have clients that you don't want to work for. Yes, you're going to have clients that are a pain in the ass, but you're also going to have those running your own company. So better to learn that working for somebody else than to do it working for yourself. And then along with that, go really deep into one thing and not just like it is possible to niche down too far, right? Mm-hmm. So when I was, and I've told him this before, so, and we laugh about it now, but when I was first starting at Distilled in New York City in 2011, Tom Critchlow was my boss. His brother's one of the founders of Distilled. Distilled's a great agency, but you know, Tom and I are about the same age. He's 9 months older than me. He's one of my best friends. But he was my manager. And we sat down and he's like, I really think that you should like focus on one thing within SEO. He's like, focus on video SEO or local SEO or something like that. And I was like, Tom, I don't want to do that. Like, I want to get really good at SEO. The uh-huh. irony, I guess, is that like now I do focus on when I've done my own SEO consulting, I do focus on SEO for very large websites.
Okay.
But I kind of experienced the gamut of SEO and I didn't kind of niche myself down as just a technical SEO or just a link builder or something like that from the start. I would say learn all the different channels. You know, now I run all the channels at Credo. I oversaw all the channels at hopheads.com. I oversaw things like email marketing at Trulia Rentals, right? Mm-hmm. So I know those things. And it's funny because a couple of years ago, I was hanging out with Tom in Brooklyn. And I was like, hey, Tom, do you remember giving me that advice? He's like, no, but that's terrible advice. I'm like, I know. I completely agree. Like, become good at SEO and understanding what all the things are, you know, in SEO, what drives rankings, et cetera. But then really what drives the business, right? And not just bringing in traffic, you know, through SEO, top of the funnel, middle of the funnel, bottom of the funnel, but then also what happens to that traffic once it gets to the site, learn some conversion stuff, learn some business model stuff, learn some email marketing, you know, learn some PPC, even just basic like retargeting, like that is going to serve you so, so well long term in your career.
No doubt. Well, John, thank you so much for sharing all of these stories, all of this advice, all of this tactical knowledge. Last thing is where can people find out more about you and what you've got going on?
So the best place to find out about Credo is the website, getcredo.com, C-R-E-D-O. So that's the best place to find out about Credo. To find me, there are two places. I'm Doherty JF, D-O-H-E-O-T-Y-J-F everywhere. But the two channels that I'm really investing in socially are Twitter, I'm on Twitter a lot. And then also Instagram. So Instagram.com/DoherTyJF. I'm actually doing a lot of like Instagram TV videos and that sort of stuff, talking about some rants about stuff, but really talking about like building a business, right? Sales and some marketing, you know, strategies and that sort of stuff. So those are the two places to follow me.
Perfect. And if you're listening, you can find those in the show notes so that you don't have to remember all of those to type them straight into the URL bar. So, John, thank you so much again. If you're ever in Austin, come stop by. We'll have a beer. And yeah, thanks again, man.
Sounds like fun. Appreciate it, Garrett.
You've been listening to the Digital Marketer Podcast. For more information and show notes, go to digitalmarketer.com/podcast. And if you like the show, remember to subscribe and leave a review. Thank you for listening.
Hey, DM listeners, if you're running a Black Friday or Cyber Monday special, listen up, because Digital Marketer just released our Canva Holiday Promo Pack. It includes almost 200 templates that you can use to make the graphics for all your upcoming holiday specials and three unique design themes for each holiday. The Promo Pack is usually $27, but you can get it today for free. Check the show notes for the link to download, or you can go directly to digitalmarketer.com/LP/holiday templates. That's digitalmarketer.com/LP/holiday templates.